Welcome to a Catalyst for Change podcast, where we are a catalyst to inspire compassion among people, promote collaboration with leaders, and build capacity for programming. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Catalyst for Change show. I'm so glad you're with us today. The show is hosted by Support After Abortion. Support After Abortion exists to end the demand for abortion by helping to heal those who have been impacted. We believe that to do that, we operate in three pillars. We inspire our compassion for those who have been hurt by abortion and need healing. We want to build our collaboration among leaders, and we ultimately want to grow the capacity of the abortion healing movement so we can serve everyone that is seeking healing. Today, I'm really excited to be announcing our conference dates and our theme for this conference. I'm going to keep you on your toes and give it a little time as I unwrap this with our special guest today, Pam Stenzel. Welcome, Pam.
Oh, so good to be with you, Lisa.
I am so glad that you are here today. Like I just said to Pam, we just figured out what this conference is supposed to be about, and I couldn't have thought about a better way to introduce it than to have you on the show with me today, Pam, because you just really get it. So before we get started, though, Pam, can you introduce yourself to our viewers?
So I'm Pam Stenzel. Some people know me as the sex lady. That's usually, and they don't remember my full name, but I started working back in the pro-life movement way back in the late 80s when I was working with pregnancy centers, operating pregnancy centers in the Minneapolis area. And after having done that, you know, working in just there with young girls in a crisis pregnancies, we started to realize, boy, these girls are making decisions about sex with zero information, not understanding the consequences. And really, as a movement, and the pregnancy center movement kind of was birthed out of Roe v. Wade in the 70s, and in the 80s, we were still kind of fledgling. Our big deal was we didn't want girls having an abortion, so we would do a pregnancy test. And if the pregnancy test was negative, it was like we would be like, oh, see you next month. There was never a discussion about the decisions being made that led them to show up in our clinic in the first place. And I began to really have a heart to speak to these young girls about their sexual choices and the end results and helping them make better decisions when it comes to sex. Because, you know, that really is part of an important piece of this movement. Important piece of ending the demand for abortion would be having unmarried people not having multiple partner sex constantly, you know. So in that move, and we were talking about this, when you see, hey, here's an issue, here's something we're not addressing, you've got to tackle it from every angle, from prevention to the immediate case in point to the aftermath and dealing with it. And when you are not looking at any intervention as holistically as that, the goal isn't going to be reached. And then the other piece, Lisa, that I think we have to really remind people of is that this isn't just about ending a specific wrong, or this is about bringing wholeness and life to individual people. When a girl walks through my door at a pregnancy clinic, I care about her, not just the baby that might be growing inside of her or not. I have to care about her. And what's most important in getting an end result where we have healing and hope is that we care about these women and their relationships and their life going forward. And that's what's going to get us to our end goal of healing. And really, at the end of the day, our end goal should always be a right relationship and wholeness in anyone's life.
Amen, sister. And that's why there's so much synergy. I remember hearing you at the March for Life in St. Augustine, and you're like, let's talk about sex. And, you know, there were parents there and adolescents there. And I just feel like that's what's missing in our world is this direct conversation about what it is. I mean, we're doing all this kind of roundabout communication, and to be a part of your boldness and to witness it, it's attractive. But I'm imagining that people get scared of it. Have you had kind of like a pushback regarding maybe the way that you've approached things and how people have received you?
Yeah, well, here's the deal. I'll tell you, because my main audience has always been students, you know, what mm-hmm. adults or whatever. And actually, typically, if I get pushback, it is adults. It's not teens. And it's mostly because they haven't dealt with the stuff in their own lives. honestly, if we want to unpack why. But one thing we've always said, and I've been speaking for 27 years, typically right now it's probably closer to 200,000 people a year. It was for a while closer to 500,000 every year around the world. I have a very specific way I present. And that's part of personality. In a spiritual sense, we talk about it, spiritual gifts. I have a prophet gift. I know that. And other people have mercy gifts and educate, you know what I mean? And so the way I approach things, but for such a time as this is what's necessary. And people used to say, this is kind of shop talk, but there was a woman back when I first started speaking to kids about sex. Her name was Mary Beth Bonacci, beautiful girl, just lovely. And she was out there talking to students about sex, and people would say to me, well, Pam, how are you different than, you know, Mary Beth? And I said, well, Mary Beth is nice and I'm not. So if you want nice, you know what I mean? But at some point, so I think all messages need to have, and I love your word catalyst, because I think that is like huge. There are certain things that bring that catalyst for change. And so the way I present sometimes is a catalyst. Now leaving me, they're going to have to do some work and then be around people who have more counseling and, you know, but sometimes if there's not that cat, where is that point where that light bulb goes on in someone's head that says, I need to get help? The helping process now is going to go on, but there needs that, you know, that moment. And so really most of what I've done has been that moment, that aha moment, that moment where a kid sits in a high school and goes, my goodness, I've been making choices that are not right. Now I need help to do better. So you kind of have to think of how, what it is that you do. And that's why having a conference like we're having is like so important, because what it does is it's all of us coming with the piece that we do well, that, and we're not saying, well, mine is the only way, or this is the only important piece. No, every piece that we're doing is so important, and all of us have to do what we do well, really well. And when we come together with all of those pieces, I mean, we change the world. That's what this is about.
So good. And I'm reflecting on a comment I heard recently that says resistance is the catalyst for change. Mm. And I was thinking, you know, resistance in terms of working out, like you're never going to build muscle, burn body weight, nothing without the resistance of, you know, whatever you have to do, whether it's resisting eating or resisting, you know, the pain in your body as you're working out, whatever it is, but it goes into every other area of our life. And that's why I love how you show up and the giftings that God has given you, because we know YouTube isn't quitting. Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, it isn't quitting. I mean, I was just on Twitter the other day, TikTok the other day, just trying to get a sense of what is out there for abortion healing. And the things that I came across, Pam, I was like, oh my gosh, my kids want to be on this app. And these people are like telling a story that I don't want my kids ever to believe. There was a couple of fraternity boys that looked like that were joking about miscarriage. And this was the joke. What starts with miss and ends with errage? And the guy said, marriage. And he's like, no, miscarriage. And it's a guy's favorite thing. Like, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And there's all these 20-year-old good looking guys joking about miscarriage like it's nothing, like it's a guy's favorite thing. And I'm thinking, how many thousands of millions of people are hurting? So anyway, off of that tangent, but going back.
But to that point, we live in a culture, and you know, we all want to unplug and move to Amish farms, especially as parents. I get that. But but we can't undo technology. And so basically we know that not only our kids, but young people, students, 20 somethings in general, are going to be just bombarded with a lot of messages. And so now how do we help them break through this noise, evaluate what's true and not true, instead of just being that consumer that just sucks everything in and just believes whatever they're hearing? And it's for our own children, teach people to think critically about what they're taking in. Right. Because that's, I think, the biggest problem with students. It's like they just taking things in and they're not taking the time to think critically about it. But we can't change the fact that they're going to be bombarded with messages again. You know, we can unplug, we can say, you're not allowed to watch this, this, you're not allowed to live, basically. Or we can do the hard job of teaching them to be discerning, you know, and to think through what they're hearing. I'll never forget when I took my daughter, this will age me because she's married with two kids now, but her and her little friends to see a movie called The Titanic. And, you know, we're all watching it. It's and they're little ninth grade girls like, oh, this was so emotional. I took them out after the movie and I said, let's talk about this, girls. It was a good thing that boy died, because if he didn't, that relationship would have been ended the minute they hit shore. This was not okay. And these poor girls like, oh, how dare you wreck our beautiful love story. No, think about what you're watching. Don't just take it in. Think about it, you know. And so just those things are so important. And then we have to, with the message of healing and hope and the message that is so counter everything else, we have to find out, how do we deliver that very shocking message? Because it's so antithesis to everything they're hearing, and break through all of this noise and actually reach their hearts and minds.
Oh, and that is such a good segue. So drum roll, please. We will be discussing this at our conference. And so this is exactly what we are going to be doing on March 26th and 27th. We are going to be talking about entering into the pro-life movement with a message of healing moving forward, a message that's so desperately needed, because up until now, Pam, it's been the billboards that say abortion is murder. It's been the dead baby after the abortion, right? It's been the little images of the baby. I mean, there's still so much of what happened in the 70s and 80s that has continued to follow us, except something's changed. And it's this idea that resistance needs to be a part of our process, because we aren't in the 70s or 80s anymore. We're not in the 90s. We're not in the 2000s. Like, we're entering 2021, right? Like, we have got to look at what has happened in our history, which is four generations of abortions now. We have great grandmothers that are still walking this earth that are encouraging their great granddaughters to have abortions, right? We have men and women who don't know that there's another option, that are encouraging other family members, because what you don't know, you don't know. And so I want to unpack that with you today, because you've had some of that experience on the other side in the prevention realm. Can you break into that and help us understand how you saw the movement shift to understand prevention is part of the process?
Yeah, you know, I think in the beginning, when I was running the pregnancy center, you know, people saw me as being very involved in pro-life work, because, you know, I was there right in that moment of crisis and watching and hoping and praying for young women to choose life. So in that sense, right, we were doing that. However, we weren't out giving the kind of messages you were just talking about, because that's not how you change hearts and minds. That might be how you change a law. It has nothing to do with how you deal with people. And it was in that I realized, hey, we've got these kids making decisions with zero information, and they need to have that information. I can't choose for kids. I'm not the sex police. I can't go on their dates with them. I don't have time. But what they do deserve is to understand and know the truth, so that they, in that information, can make a better choice. And I said it then, and I stand by it. I firmly believe that young people are capable of making good choices. They have to have all the information. And without that, they're going to fall into the trap that the culture lays for them. So I left the pregnancy center just because of time. I was getting calls to speak so much that I had to just, well, my husband, it's like, you're either going to speak or you're going to run this pregnancy center, because both is killing us here. So I left. And I remember when I left, I got to go speak full time about chastity, about sexual integrity, about making better choices in order to avoid them having to walk into my clinic or any abortion clinic or otherwise, right? So people in the movement were like, well, you've left the pro-life movement. What are you talking about? I'm probably doing more now by speaking to literally thousands of teenagers before they would ever need or be in a position to get help than I ever was sitting there waiting for the damage to take place. A cute little story. This older man who gave money to my ministry came up to me and he said, Pam, there were these shepherds and they had this flock of sheep. And if you don't know, the sheep are stupid animals. They're just dumb. So when God calls you a sheep, that wasn't a compliment. But they were on a hill, and there was a a big fence that would keep them from going off the cliff, but there was a gate. And one day the gate got left open and these stupid sheep were falling off the cliff. So the shepherds ran down to the bottom to bandage the sheep. And finally one smart shepherd looked up at the other and said, maybe somebody should shut the gate. And he looked at me and said, Pam, God's calling you to shut the gate. So do you see it, bandaging the sheep is still important, but shutting the gate so that they're not falling off the edge is just as important. So okay. I think what we have to see, and I think when I first met you and when I heard you present about support after abortion and the ministry, the thing that just every light bulb went on in my head was this concept that many women who have one abortion end up going on to have another one and another one. And our abortion healing movement was dealing with women 20 and 30 years past. And that can't continue. We have got to get healing to them long before then. And so this is where you have to see this integrated call, that if we aren't doing this well, as soon as possible in their lives, not only are we not presenting them with the wholeness and healing that they just need because they're women and men created in God's image who deserve that, but we're also allowing this damage to continue and more lives to be impacted and lost going down the road. So we have to be involved in this, and we have to be involved in it effectively. And any ministry that doesn't, or any movement that doesn't stop itself and go, are we being effective? And if we're not, how do we go back and do it better so that we can say, now we are being effective? This isn't working. And that's not to say everything back here was bad. It's just, it's not effective, or it's time is moved and we need to do something better.
So good. And so I want to go back to that analogy with the gate. That was such a good, I think, segue for us, because we believe at Support After Abortion that hearts are the only thing that's going to change a law. Laws don't change the heart of somebody. So no. If there's somebody watching or listening and they see the gate as a law stopping abortion, right? And stopping people, break that down for us, because we know different, but I want them to hear it from you.
So the thing is, what have we been doing this now? Almost 50 years? And never has, in the way they think of it, well, pro-life politicians will pass laws, we'll do this. It doesn't stop any, and we all know that. I mean, we've said in the pregnancy center movement that you can change the law all day, that our job is still going to be here. In fact, it might be even more that, you know, worse, right? So the reality is, and then without getting into the incremental, I don't want to get into that, but because I was conceived in rape, this concept that we can say, well, a woman has to have a 24-hour waiting period or see an ultrasound unless it was rape. What? I mean, what is that? Is my life not valuable? I mean, either all life is valuable or it's not. And again, that I would rather change hearts and provide resources and healing and hope to a woman who has experienced sexual assault than just pass a law that says anything one way. It is a personal level. And on a spiritual basis, and I know not everyone, you know, kind of operates in that realm, but if I can for just a minute, I think when Jesus came, they all wanted him to be a king. They saw a political end, and that's not what God had at all. And so his crucifixion looked like defeat. It looked like, oh my goodness. But it was through that real freedom came. That was what he came to do. So we got to get our political, this is not about, it's not politics. This is about reaching people's hearts. This, no matter what the law is or isn't, the more important is changing lives and impacting individuals and seeing people whole and well. That's far more important than whatever the law is or is not.
Yeah. And so what this conference is really going to do is build a case for change, build a case for what 2021 and beyond needs to look like for the pro-life movement. Because at night, when you close that door and you close off the world, you turn off your TV, your cell phone, who is the most influential person? I mean, your family members, right? Those who are speaking life into you. And so if we aren't changing the family structure and helping people understand that abortion doesn't need to be the answer, that it actually hurts. There's so many people that don't even know that the abortion experience experience that they had is actually causing their depression, their anger, because they're so confused by the messaging of the world. It's just a clump of cells. So the world's saying it's okay, but then they're feeling internally this battle. And the women that I encounter say things like, you know, it's socially acceptable, but nobody's talking about it. So where do I flush out all of this confusion? With the family member that told me it was okay, and she's validating my experience, but yet I still feel like now I'm more promiscuous than I've ever been. I'm eating all of this food. I'm drinking all of this alcohol. Like, what's changed? And so, you know, this conference is going to unpack that for us. It's going to help us see where we came from and where we need to go, how we don't need to be hanging signs up on our, you know, out in front of abortion clinics, abortion is murder. They need to say things like, you are worth it. There's healing, there's hope. And so, you know, Pam, going back again to that shutting the thing, what if there's somebody listening right now who says, I failed if I can't save the baby from being aborted? What would you want them to hear? If you give up then, what happens?
First of all, that's not the deal. I don't care what ministry you decide to do. I mean, what if I walked out and said, I just spoke to 800 high school students, and if one of them leaves and goes and has sex, I've failed. No, that's not my job. My job is to speak the truth. My job is to offer love. My job is to create an environment where there can be help and healing. I could have it if a girl comes right into my pregnancy clinic, and then I give her all the hope. I give her all of the, I say, we're going to be there for you. You have adoption as an option. You can parent. We're not going to leave you alone in this decision. And she leaves and still has an abortion. That's not my deal. I was there. My call, what I was asked to do, is to give her truth, love, and information. What they do with that decision is 100% theirs. So there is no failing at all. That's what God does. So we're, even in the abortion healing movement, we're not healing anyone. We are the catalyst. We are just the vessel for which we provide so that God can heal them. So that way, and I used to end a lot of my talks, not with the students, but with adults, like we did in St. Augustine, with a quote from St. Mother Teresa, or St. Teresa of Calcutta. She said this: God did not call us to be successful. He called us to be faithful. And so we have to get ourselves out of this. Like, I'm the one doing this, or I'm saving her. No, none of that. We're just working and doing what we've been called to do, and we're willing and wanting to come alongside and provide every resource available for that person to receive healing. But at the end of the day, they have to choose to walk in it. It has to be something that they choose to pick up and do the work of. I can't do the work for them. And that's true in any choice being made. It's same with whether they're choosing to be sexually active or be promiscuous, or whether they're choosing to have abortions or place for adoption or whatever. I work with a safe haven. So what, maybe they choose to make a surrender, or they dump their baby in a dumpster. Do you know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, I can do nothing more than provide help, hope, and everything to help them make good choices. But at the end of the day, they have to walk in and make the decision themselves.
Wow, Pam. And that means that our heart posture and our presence needs to maintain a neutral, loving stance, because what I'm learning in this group that we're leading, Keys to Hope and Healing, we're on week 6 this week, and Pam, it's blowing my mind. There was a shift between week 3 and week 4 when the girls really realized where their pain was coming from. And what they said was, it's nice to know that I can say it was my baby and it was connected to me. It took them 3 sessions to unpack that, because they were so confused with the messages of the world. And then on week 4, something happened. This idea that I can name the pain that I'm having because it was my baby and it was connected to me changed everything. And so what if that sidewalk advocate, or the pastor, or the priest, or the mentor had that loving stance, a non-judgmental stance? We all make mistakes in this world. Nobody's mistake is greater than somebody else's. There's grace and mercy for all of us. But what if somebody feels safe enough to then come to you and say, I don't know why I'm hurting, but I'm hurting. You know that I had this abortion experience. Do you think that could be it? Bam, the doors fly open, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you don't know when that will be. Just what I'm saying. So it might be in that encounter. you may not see a change in that moment on the sidewalk. It could be 6 months later, but if they remember they were cared about, and we say that in our clinic all the time, you may leave here and decide to go have an abortion, or you may leave here and keep having sex. That happens all the time. But here I loved you. Here I gave you truth. And here I told you that I will be here no matter what you choose to do. And this door is open. Then we've created the place for them to end the timing. It might not be that day. It might be 6 months down the road. It might be a year. It might be three. But we've left that door open. We haven't scared them. We haven't further damaged them. We have in love and caring for them as a human being created in God's image, said, we love you. It's not conditional on the choice you make here. We love and care for you. And we will be here whenever you're ready to have the discussion.
So good. And that shifts the paradigm immediately, because it changes that woman who's waited 40 years to confess this, that has grown spiritually, that has grown in every other way, more mature, and finally realizes, oh, this is the impact. But now she's impacted another generation, maybe failed marriages, you know, multiple traumas on top of traumas. Who knows? What you just explained is shifting the paradigm. It's an instant experience of healing. There's instant breakthrough. There's naming our pain, which then helps us not repeat it, like you said before. We right. know that this will actually end the demand for abortion if we get inside these families, get inside these men and women's hearts, and help them find the healing that they deserve. Their minds are going to be blown. Their minds are going to shift. These girls right. in this group, they're shifted. They're never going to have an abortion. Never is a big word, but I would put money that they wouldn't, because they can name it now.
Exactly right. And the thing is, this healing method, this way of attacking this very big problem, it is not like, well, in the US we do it this way, and in this state we're going to have this. Do you know what I mean? This is the way it's going to be won, not only here, not just in your state, in your city, in this country, around the world. This is the same method that's going to work in Ireland, and is going to work in Poland, and is going to work in South America. Do you know what I mean? This is how it's done. And really, again, I feel like going back to the spiritual all the time, but this is the call. The call of God is not to end somebody's sin. That's not, the call of God is to bring help, healing, hope, and the gospel into people's lives, to radically change them. That's the call. And if you're out here trying to fix and put, it's like that boy that the dam was bursting, and he's trying to put one finger in one little part of the dam bursting, wow, and then there's another one, good. And all of a sudden you don't have any fingers or toes left. It's like, that's what you're trying to do when you're dealing with legal things and changing. You're trying to stick your finger in way too many holes here. So let's just stop the water from going altogether, you know? So I think that's what we have to be about. It's the bigger issue that, and that's why we can come together as a community at a conference like this. And it doesn't matter what state you're in or what country you're in. These are things and tools that are going to work no matter where you are.
So good, Pam. So if this excites you, if you can feel the passion that Pam and I are sharing today, visit our website at supportafterabortion.com. Get signed up. It's no cost. It's absolutely free for 2 days. We're going to have conversations about the different types of abortions, how they're impacting men and women, how abortion even impacts men. It's very rarely talked about. Only recently has that shifted. We're going to talk about the parallels to what Pam shared earlier, how it took a while for prevention to become a part of the pro-life movement, and how we're introducing healing. We're going to have tons of beautiful speakers. We're really going to build the case and then equip you to go out onto the sidewalk, to go into your communities, to go into your families, to make change on a level that we know that will really blow the tops off of abortion. So Pam, if people are interested in getting to know you and your work, have you as a speaker, how might they get in touch with you?
So you can go to pamstenzel.com. If you can spell my name, there's information there and resources there. Or Enlighten, my organization is Enlighten Communications, so it's enlightencom.com. But if you go to pamstenzel.com, it'll lead you through that way. So that's probably the best way to do that. And let me just say too about this conference, it is so powerful, because even though it's virtual, it's virtual, right? We're not doing
it. It is. Mm-hmm. Not yet.
There's so many opportunities for you as an attendee to be involved, to share, to network. It's not like you're just sitting there listening to, you know, speaker after speaker, and then your head's exploding. It really has provided that. So you need to be involved. It's a great place for you to network, to ask questions, to give your input, to let us know what you are doing and how effective it is. And that way we're all helping each other.
Yeah. And to come as you are, let us challenge you. Maybe you hear this and you're like, I'm on the fence. I'm not sure. I've been on the sidewalk for 30 years and I've seen this many babies saved. Just come hear us out. We want to build a case for the future for you to feel equipped, because as we said, there are too many generations that have gone before us that have experienced abortion. And when that door at night closes, those family members have way more influence than you will ever have on the sidewalk. And so with that, I just want to thank everybody for joining us. Pam, thank you for joining us. I appreciate you taking time with us all the time. Again, if you're interested in learning more about how to become a catalyst for change, we can help train you, equip you. We can also help you heal. Supportafterabortion.com. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for joining us today. If you or someone you know has been impacted by abortion, you are not alone. Contact us today at supportafterabortion.com. If you were inspired by today's message, we welcome you to join the conversation by following us on Facebook or Instagram.